The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
When you turn on the evening news, do you see what you want to see or what you need to see? Welcome to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. It seems like more often than not, the good news and people that are making it are buried into a two-minute feature piece near the end of the report. What about giving these people and this kind of news a full hour every week? Now, here's your host, Mariana Cacciatore.
Hello and welcome to our show today. I'm very excited to be interviewing poet and philosopher Mark Nepo. He's the author of the New York Times best-selling book, The Book of Awakening, Having the Life You Want by Being Present to the Life You Have. Today we're going to talk about his most recent book, a book of poems he's written over the last 13 years. The book is titled Reduced to Joy. Mark and his wife, Susan, are friends of mine, and I've had the privilege to watch them both pay homage to the creative impulse. Susan is a potter, Mark, as you know, a poet and writer, and they have influenced the way I have lived my life, and I hope that as you listen to this interview, you know, you are swayed as well toward the creative impulse. Before we bring Mark onto the show, I'd like to say a few words about Bread for the Journey, the organization behind this radio show, and why it is that we have a radio show. You know, our vision at Bread for the Journey is to nurture the seed of generosity in every human heart. And one of our foundational values is storytelling. In our 26 years of giving small grants to kind-hearted people doing good deeds in the world, we've met many, many people who are generous of spirit. In other words, their generosity shows up in myriad ways, from creating a volunteer-run program in their community that solves a problem in a unique way, to giving someone in their life the benefit of the doubt. And we want you to meet these people as well. This show is a way to share our bounty and also highlight the kinds of people and stories that don't make the cut on the evening news. You know, it's meaningful and necessary for human beings to have a reflection of themselves that is accurate. Stories of others doing good things help us to see that goodness in ourselves. It helps us to want to live, you know, up to our highest ideals. And these stories also include hardship and falling down, also giving us an example of how to forgive ourselves and get back up again. I don't believe our most common news outlets have this value built into their mission. The evening news rarely inspires me. So we at Bread for the Journey Radio are doing our small part to change that. And at Bread for the Journey, we're also in full swing with our year-end fundraising, and our budget has run short this year. So if you have a few extra dollars or a lot of extra dollars, we could use your help. Please make a donation today. You can go to our website and do that online at breadforthejourney.org. You can learn more about our organization there as well. And now I'd like to introduce you to Mark Nepo, who is being featured this very week on Oprah's Super Soul Sunday. If you're free tomorrow, tune in to the OWN Network, OWN, on your television and watch part two of Mark's interview with Oprah. Mark is a poet and philosopher who has taught in the fields of poetry and spirituality for 40 years. A New York Times number one best-selling author, he has published 14 books and recorded 8 audio projects. His recent work includes Reduced to Joy, which we'll be talking about today, 7,000 Ways to Listen, which he'll be talking about on Oprah tomorrow, and that book won the 2012 Books for a Better Life Award. The next book, Staying Awake. Another one, Holding Nothing Back. Another one, As Far as the Heart Can See, Finding Inner Courage, and lastly, Surviving Has Made Me Crazy, which I love. He also has audio books. The Book of Awakening is done in audio, Find Inner Courage, and As Far as the Heart Can See. As a cancer survivor, Mark devotes his writing and teaching to the journey of inner transformation and the life of relationship. Good morning, Mark.
Oh, thank you, Marianne. It's great with you. Great to be with you. And you know, let me, before we get into the poems, just pause for a minute and echo, you know, a word of love and encouragement about Bread for the Journey. You know, you and I have been friends for many years and came to know each other through the good works of Bread for the Journey. And I just, you know, I can't support you guys enough. It is just an amazing, amazing, authentic, grassroots learning and teaching about giving and how, not just how giving helps those who receive, but how giving helps those who give, and how it helps us all become more completely who we are. So I've learned a lot from being a part of the Bread for the Journey adventure, and I just really encourage people to give what they can and to get involved where they can.
Oh, well, thank you so very much. I appreciate that, Mark. Touches my heart. Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
So, we've got 8 poems that we've selected, 7 of them from the book Reduced to Joy, and 1 from your Fuller collection. And we're going to go through them one at a time. We'll invite you to read the poem, and then we'll talk about sort of what was happening for you as you wrote the poem, what was wanting to be said. And I'm particularly interested in the creative impulse. And, you know, so throughout the show, we'll be talking about that. And we're going to begin with the poem that is not in the book titled The Poems, because it really lays the foundation for this thing I'm calling the creative impulse. So let's begin here, Mark. Do you want to read that poem?
Sure. It's, as you said, it's called The Poems. When starting out, I was so excited that anything showed up, I thought I was done. But somewhere along the way, I realized they are alive, and I wasn't wrestling them into view. They, respecting my effort, agreed to be seen. Not to be revealed, but to be loved. Now I circle back in the morning to see what they need from me. Just more of my attention, which starts with me undressing what I know. For the longest time, I thought I was revising. It's more a conversation in which I keep learning how to listen. And when I do, they will, after a time, pull aside a cloth or a cloud to make obvious the reason they have come. So, you know, I think, you know, I don't write often about the actual poems themselves, but, you know, this really came to me in the last year. And you know, I think that as we talk about the creative impulse, it's important for everyone listening to realize that it is not reserved for artists. It helps us stay close to our aliveness. Every person has a creative impulse. In a way, it's very interesting because, in a way, the unimaginable event of being born is so miraculous. And at that moment, we are so alive that we have this residual yearning wherever we can to create and build as a way to reenact our moment of birth. So it doesn't matter if you arrange flowers, if you build furniture, if you know, you play music, if you simply cut a path through the property that you are borrowing, though you may think you own it, and walk through it. We are constantly looking to follow that impulse so we can stay as close to our aliveness as possible. And so what that poem opens up is the notion that we're not really creating something out of nothing. That in fact, everything is already alive, and by our attention and our love, we get to be in relationship with it, and in fact, we are shaped by creating it. So I would, you know, I would offer that my notion of great work has shifted from when I was a young man. You know, great work isn't creating something that has never been here before. A great work is one that the person who has birthed it or helped bring it into view is changed for that experience. I'm the one, if when I'm transformed by a poem or something that I've retrieved, that's what makes it useful and helpful.
I agree with you, Mark. Recently, I have been writing poetry, and so I feel what happens. I mean, the poem comes out of me about in response to an experience I'm having. So the poem is really written for me. I'm grateful when I share it with somebody and it benefits them as well. And we hope that those experiences are universal enough that they serve in some way. But it's really the world in which I live wanting to speak to me about some experience. And my, as you said in the poem, it's more a conversation in which I keep learning how to listen.
And I believe that, you know, when we can be authentic in those moments, the reason that they reach and touch other people is because when I go far enough into me, I find you. And when you go far enough into you, you find me. That at the center, we all drink from the same well. And the only way to get there, paradoxically, is through our particular individual experience. So this is the difference between significance and meaning. Significance is that the, you know, first woman I fell in love with had auburn hair. That's significant to me. But when I remember that, and when that conjures up that feeling of first love, and I can talk about that honestly, now we get to meaning that anyone will feel because they have been there too.
Right. They experience through their own lens the story of first love.
Yes.
Right. It brings another aspect to the whole idea that we are all one, which, you know, the more I move into, in my own life, move into my greater awareness of what compassion is and what it means, the more I am aware of that, the significance of that experience, we are all one. And it shows up on many, many levels, and I think you've just spoken to one of them. You know, the poem, this process and the creative process about the way in which you write, I mean, some might call it a first draft, although I imagine sometimes a poem just comes out fully formed. And it changes over years. I imagine the many years you've been writing poems. But there's a way in which we write this, you know, we write this first thing, and then as you talk, come back around, circle back in the morning to see what they need from me.
Yeah, and this brings up a different notion of, you know, we learn, those of us who write, the craft of writing, which is different than the art of perception. The craft of writing, we learn how to make words economical, how to pare them down, how to take out what's extraneous, which is a fine skill. But more deeply, revision means going back to the original vision or feeling, that we get a glimpse of something that is deep, ineffable, all-encompassing, the wholeness of life. And then we try to write down some trail of it, some pointer that will be a doorway to that feeling. And then the work is, more importantly, to go back to that original feeling or vision so that we can stay in relationship with it and continue to portray it accurately. So revision is not always about paring down language. It's about opening the door to our heart again and again.
Yeah, I find that to be true as well. And thank you for making the distinction. I had never really thought about it, but it is important. It just keeps pointing to that, you know, that art of perception, this idea that we're here to listen more deeply, and the things that speak to us come in myriad ways.
Absolutely. And you know, I've talked about poetry as the unexpected utterance of the soul. It's not the way words are arranged on paper. It's the moment of truth that we stumble on.
Do you find yourself writing at spontaneous times throughout a day, or is there a time of day that you kind of dedicate and devote to writing?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I'm always kind of scribbling. And, you know, lifelong scribbler, I always have pen and paper in my pocket. And though I do other, you know, with all the wonderful technology, there are times I will dictate a note in my phone, or, you know, and I often will write on the computer, but I always have pen and paper. And so whenever I'm moved or touched or intrigued by something, which again is usually a detail that opens up the deeper world. It could be the way the light hits a fast food wrapper in an alley. It may not even make sense to me, but when something for a second has that added glow, I am compelled to note it and be in conversation with it either then or later. Now, that's kind of the field work that's always going on.
Mm-hmm.
But every day, I'm a morning person. I love to begin the day right where I am in my study, and I love to begin the day with at least a few hours in this space, in this conversation. And you know, when I was younger, I would be very, you know, like any writer, I'd always be concerned, would I ever finish anything? Would I really get anything done? And, you know, of course, at this point in my life, you know, I'm not concerned about that. And some days I may write a lot, and some days I will maybe not write anything, but just be in that conversation, or maybe write a word. So it's really about being in that space.
And over time, you've developed a relationship with that space so that you trust you'll always, you know, you're going to honor it. It's honoring you. You're honoring it. You're in conversation. You're listening and paying attention.
Oh, yeah. You know, yeah. It's just like you have to brush your teeth every day.
Right.
right. You know, it's just once it has the space in your life, it's a lifeline.
Right.
Whether I produce anything or not, it's the way that I stay clean inwardly.
That's a beautiful way to look at it. We've got to take a break at this moment. So to our listening audience, we've just gotten started. Stay with us and we'll be back in a moment.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet? Why not? Just go to facebook.com/World Talk Radio or search for the keywords World Talk Radio. Once you're a part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings at the World Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our timeline. Just go to facebook.com/World Talk Radio or search for World Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Joe Swedish, CEO of WellPoint. We proudly support the March of Dimes and all they do to reduce the rate of premature birth in the United States. Though premature births have recently declined, still 500,000 babies are born too soon each year. We're helping the March of Dimes fund cutting-edge research and community programs that help moms and their babies live healthier lives. Please visit marchofdimes.com and join us in working together for stronger, healthier babies.
There are over 140 million products manufactured worldwide. It is impossible to know the ingredients in these products, especially those made overseas. Stan Salat Jr., President and CEO of the HSF Mark and the Counterfeit Mark Alliance, is the host of People to People, working together for your safety. Stan believes in our right to know the type and amount of hazardous materials in consumer products and whether they are counterfeit. Find out how you can protect yourself every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're here talking to Mark Nepo about his recent book of poetry called Reduced to Joy. And we're going to begin this segment by asking him to read the title poem, Reduced to Joy.
Yeah, thank you, Mariana. Mm-hmm. Reduced to Joy. I was sipping coffee on the way to work, the back road under a canopy of maples turning orange. In the dip of woods, a small doe gently leaping. I pulled over, for there was nowhere else to go. She paused as if she knew I was watching. A few orange leaves fell around her like blessings no one can seem to find. I sipped some coffee, completely at peace, knowing it wouldn't last. But that's all right. We never know when we will blossom into what we're supposed to be. It might be early, it might be late. It might be after 30 years of failing at a misguided way, or the very first time we dare to shed our mental skin and touch the world. They say, if real enough, some see God at the moment of their death. But isn't every fall and letting go a death? Isn't God waiting right now in the chill between the small doe's hoof and those fallen leaves? So, you know, I wanted that the book, and that's the end poem, the title poem is the end poem in the book, because I wanted the journey there of this book to end in a moment. In a moment. Okay. Where everything surprisingly again and again opens up to us. And, you know, this really, this poem, as many poems, this was a moment that happened, and I did pull over to the side of the road. And now, I mean, as I say it, I can see the light and those orange leaves and the doe looking up to me, and being quiet there, and you know, later writing this poem. And so, you know, I think that the whole notion of reduced to joy really is that the journey of experience wears away everything that's not essential. Mm. And if we can hold each other up to the scouring of experience, we are worn to our inner beauty. The same way that the sea pounds cliffs on the edge of an island into just magnificent forms that we travel and save our money to go look at and watch. But, you know, cliffs, I'm not sure how easy that was. If they could speak, they might say, oh my God, I'm getting, you know, everything pounded out of me. But this is the journey. This is the journey of experience, and it ensures that we need each other. We need to be able to hold each other up to arrive at our beauty and our joy.
And we need each other to help develop a kind of courage to go through that, just like the cliffs, the pounding away at our at our life, actually. I don't want to name what in our life, but that's what loss is. And I think it shapes us in ways that make us, if we allow it to wash over us, if we allow it to happen, if we can surrender and let go and go through the wave, it helps us become much more clear on everything that is not essential that you just spoken about.
Oh, and you know, we have no choice. I mean, we think we have a choice. We think that we can avoid experiencing loss and disappointment and grief and the scouring of life's forces. And we don't. It happens to us. We do have a choice whether we will honor that and accept it and work with it or deny it, which in the end only makes all of the difficulty worse.
Right.
So, you know, if we think about, and I was just the other day writing about this, because the life of feelings is how we are returned to our aliveness. And so if you imagine a river and a river bank and the bed and its banks, you know, the river banks and the bed cannot hold on to the water that moves through it. And yet they have the most intimate relationship with that water. Mm-hmm. Every soul on earth is such a riverbed and river banks. And the river of life flows through us, and the motion of all that life is moving through us is the life of feelings. We can no more deny it or say we're not going to accept it than the riverbed can deny the water that flows through it. Mm. And so the life of expression is the conversation with that river of life. And whether it doesn't matter, it doesn't have to be in poems or in writing or, you know, it can be in anything. It can be in, you know, Mother Teresa talked about, you know, doing small things with love. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the poem of the heart.
Right. Yes, that, the metaphor is really profound and beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, sure.
And the creative impulse. I mean, I I see it even, you know, as I watch parents work with what comes up every moment with their children. I see it with kids just in, you know, hanging out with other kids, how to respond to what is. I see it even in the moment when I'm in the grocery store communicating with somebody I'm in line with, or the person who's checking me out. Holding life with that kind of, as you spoke about, and wanting to, you know, put Reduced to Joy at the end of the book because you wanted it to end with a moment. Living in that moment is really what brings us into full relationship with our creative selves.
Yeah, and you know, moments are doorways. Moments fully met are doorways to the eternal moment. That is, when I am completely in a moment, I meet everyone who ever was in that moment. When I am completely in a moment of love, for that moment, I am aligned with everyone who has ever loved and everyone who will ever love. You know, I realized, you know, when my father, as you know, who passed away in September at the age of 93, and he loved boats and wood. He was a master woodworker, and he loved boat sailboats, and he would make model sailboats to scale, to actual blueprints, and he spent hours with little tweezers putting little tiny masts into place and rigging, and you know, when I was watching him as a boy, and he didn't know I was watching him, I was sitting on the basement steps, and he taught me the true value of immersion, because when he was putting rigging in place, he, for that moment, was so immersed that he was joined with everyone who ever built a boat in the history of the world. So, you know, we think that the reward for that kind of immersion is excellence. Well, excellence is okay, but the real reward for that kind of immersion is our experience of oneness. That's the whole art of poetry is all about, is honoring and entering whatever moment presents itself so that we can experience all of life.
Mark, let's talk about the poem, The Art of Facing Things, because that brings it right home into the one and close relationship. You know, we have many close relationships, with the most intimate ones, perhaps, with our partners. So let's start with you reading The Art of Facing Things.
Thank you. Yeah. There have been times I've been hurtful or forgotten who you are. Times I've mistaken you for one of the dark faces I've never put to rest. Times you've done the same. Times we've worked out our pain or fear, using each other as the block of wood to carve our way to truth, feeling awful when we remember that the one we carve is the one who has loved us through everything. But this is the messy art of facing things. Knocking over what I love with what I avoid, only to learn again that this is not of our timing. It doesn't matter what thorns we carry or how we squirm to avoid their pain. We unfold as long as we love, pride into blossom. My love for you has outlasted my notions of love, the way a redwood, allowed to stand after many storms, grows from the inside, forcing its bark to drop away. Well, you know, one of the difficult covenants of intimacy is that we're there for each other as we work out all of the old faces we've never put to rest.
And so, you know, we all do this. No one is exempt. In a moment, all of a sudden, I turn and snap at Susan because somehow I'm responding to a voice that echoed all the way back to my mother, though it didn't really come from Susan.
Right.
She had nothing to do with it. You know, she was just scrambling the eggs all of a sudden, and I'm snapping. So, you know, we all do this. We all do this. So it's not about not doing it. It's about remaining authentic and facing what's come up in us, what we've done, where it originated, making amends to who the loved one that we played it out on, so that we can continue to grow and be more authentically who we are and not just reactive to the things that have shaped us. And you know, to back that up a little bit further, I think that, you know, every person at some point in their development, we have an argument with life, which I think we're given in order to work through, in order to find our way to our place in the unity of things. You know, we argue with the unfairness of life, with the injustice of things, with the randomness, appearing randomness of things, of how we're hurt or how we're betrayed. And that's not to say that there is injustice, there is betrayal, things are unfair. But if we stay stuck in that argument, we never mature and get close to life. And yes, injustice needs to always be remedied. Betrayal needs to always be faced, you know. And we need to move beyond our argument with life. So all of this to say that the art of facing things is, you know, if we want to reduce violence in the world, we need to face what ours, start with by facing what is ours to face. Mm-hmm. That's the first step we can. You know, Ramana Maharshi, the great Hindu sage, said, you know, to try to save the world before liberating oneself is like trying to carpet the earth instead of wearing sandals. Isn't that great?
Tremendous.
So we are called, and the reward for facing things is that we outgrow. You know, I outgrow my notions of love the way a tree grows from the inside out and has a new skin. Its old bark sheds and it has a new skin.
Well, thank you for that. It was really profound and moving, and we've got to take a break. I can't believe we've completed two of our three segments of the show already. The time has just moved so fast. Thank you, Mark. And to our listening audience, please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Have you had a chance to check out Voice America's online magazine and blog, Press Pass? If you love our hosts and shows, check out articles that give an even deeper perspective. Plus topics about health and fitness, movie reviews, philosophy, business tips and tactics, spirituality, positive thought, current events, and even more about your favorite host. It's just a click away at VAPressPass.com. That's VAPressPass.com. VA Press Pass by Voice America. All access, all the time.
Frankly Speaking About Cancer is a program designed to empower survivors and their caregivers to deal with the social and emotional challenges of cancer. Drawing on resources from wellness communities throughout America and abroad, the show will invite physicians, researchers, nurses, social workers, patients, and caregivers to share their advice on how to live a better life with cancer. Join host Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Wellness Community, Tuesday afternoons at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Network.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're here with poet and philosopher Mark Nepo. And the next poem I'd like us to begin with, begin this segment with, is called The Industry of No.
Yeah, thank you. The Industry of No. He was born in the river of yes, but looking for love wandered into the industry of no, where the no police left warnings of don't and the no ministers preached their morals of can't. And soon he couldn't help himself. He wanted to try on no. So when his dog pawed his shirt, he scolded her no. And when two kids ran a shopping cart into his parked car, he cuffed them no. And when someone he liked started to come close, he let her near but said he wasn't ready. Now he discovered there were other ways to say no. When he was hired as a no engineer, he was sadly happy to work alone. Steadily, he designed signs that said stop and electric guns that fired bullets with a muffled no. The work of no kept him very busy. If you called, you heard, I am the engineer of no and I am not here. If you like, leave a no message and I will gladly send a no reply. He was flooded with calls. The industry of no was so successful, it had to hide its money from the government lest they say no. When he was prompted to find other avenues of no, he rode no planes to no cafes where inventors of no pleaded for new no funding. Soon there were movies that glorified no and books that pondered why the no god was so insistent on no. And seminars arose where no scholars came vast distances to say, yes, it has always been a world of no. And those specially invited stroked their worried chins, whispering to each other, it is so, it is so. As a no anthropologist traced the beginnings of no. But they all went home and dreamt of white geese flapping, their wings parting the ancient air. So, yes, I will gladly leave a no reply. you know, I think that obviously, you know, that there is, you know, William Blake in one of his aphorisms said, some are born to yes and some are born to no. And, you know, we all have that in us. But we are challenged. One of the quiet braveries of living is to continually say yes, which does not mean being obedient, which does not mean acquiescing, which does not mean getting out of the way. What it is referring to or invoking is saying yes to life, saying yes to the obstacles that are teachers, saying yes to the paradoxes that confront us, saying yes to where our effort leads us, though it's very different from where we thought we were going. So it's always leaning in to life for all of its difficulties, for all of our humanness. And you know, we're trained to say no or to say yes, but we're trained to hesitate. You know, this is one of the great lessons of Shakespeare's Hamlet. Hamlet is a yes butter. Hamlet is the archetypal person who talks himself out of everything. You know, Mariana, you wonderfully bring up the creative impulse. So every time Hamlet has an impulse toward creation, toward relationship, toward justice, toward right action, he yes-buts himself. He deliberates and deliberates until he evaporates that impulse. So we all have a Hamlet voice in us. It doesn't mean that there isn't a place for preparation or caution or deliberation, but these are skills, not worldviews to live by. These are skills that are inert. They're not good or bad. They're tools that we use. But when we elevate caution and hesitation and preparation to a code to live by, we isolate ourselves from that creative impulse. So, you know, we could actually use Hamlet as a verb. You know, I Hamleted myself, you know. So I open that up, that how do we say yes? How do we keep leaning into yes and not be overwhelmed and drained by the industry of no?
Thanks. You know, I think fear comes into the picture here. We let our minds take us to whatever places they spin out in all directions. And learning to use just simple things like our breath to bring us back to ourselves and to witness and notice when we're doing that, and we're letting all of the ways that no shows up to take over.
Yeah, and I think let's for a moment here, let me offer that encounter fear and respect, because fear gets its power from not looking.
Huh.
It's the traditional, you know, proverbial cartoon or childhood myth that if you don't look, you know, it's a boogeyman in the closet. If you don't look, it gets bigger.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It doesn't get bigger in the closet. It gets bigger in us.
Right.
Respect, literally me, the word means to look again. To look again. So when we're in fear, we need to respect ourselves and look at what we're afraid of again, so it can be right sized. You know, fear is we're not going to eliminate fear. Fear has its proper place, you know.
I think about things like, you know, things that happen that it appears as though we are looking. Let's say someone gets a diagnosis, it's frightening. They go to the computer and they type in what they've been told, and suddenly they're bombarded with tons of information. They feel it's their personal obligation to look into it and do their own research. And so they think they're looking. It's looking in a different direction, but they're looking, and it grows and deepens that fear. So it's actually refining the lens of what we're looking at.
Well, yes, and refining the lens we're looking through, because all of that's overwhelming, you know. And when we can settle, it's fear and worry and pain present themselves in an all-encompassing way. That is by nature what fear and pain and worry do. In an initial moment of pain, everything in our life is that pain. Everything in our life is that fear. And then now, by looking again, we let things settle. Or as I like to say, we outweigh the cloud of fear. Because the sun hasn't stopped shining. We outweigh the cloud of fear so we can see more accurately what's before us and right size it. So this leads me actually to a poem in the book, Way of the Dolphin, because I believe that we are always called to meet what comes at us from circumstance, from the inside, from the inside. And this poem is really about, it's about how when I was going through my surgeries, feeling like, you know, my surgeon's job, I had a rib removed from my back, and his job was to come in from the outside and get that rib and whatever was cancerous tissue and remove it. My job was inwardly to open myself so completely that he didn't have to go far in me to get it. He entered me, I met him at the surface, and that rib could slip out like butter. So this is the lesson from that is in this poem called Way of the Dolphin, and I was in the harbor in Charleston, South Carolina, seeing dolphin that triggered this, which came, as you said earlier, years later. This presented a moment by which to understand the lesson from all those years ago. Standing in the harbor, these slick wonders slip their fins in and out of early sun. I close my eyes and remember being wheeled into surgery all those years ago, believing my job was to meet my surgeon at the surface so the rib he had to remove would slip out like a dolphin of bone as soon as he would cut me. I've learned that everything that matters goes the way of the dolphin, drifting most of the time out of view, breaking surface when we least expect it, and our job in finding God, in being God, in finding truth, in being truth, in finding love, in being love, our job is to meet the world at the surface where spirit slips out through every cut.
The visual that you created in prep of that poem of you doing what work you needed to do to meet the surgeon at the place where he or she needed to do what they had to do is very powerful and vivid, and it tells the story of this, you know, respect to look again and do that work. I'm so moved by that. Thank you, Mark.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. And of course, this is the challenge of being human. This is the real quiet courage that we all need, is that the times we need to be open are when we're closed.
Right.
The times we need to look are when we don't.
Right, right. It's the journey of being alive, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And it's not to fault ourselves because we're closed or because we're not looking. And, you know, the journey, I find that the journey of, and this goes, actually this leads to another poem.
Although we don't have time for another poem. We only have 2 minutes before we have to end the show, believe it or not.
So that's fine. We'll let it go there. But let me just say that, you know, we're also asked to restore our trust again and again in life. Experience throws us around and we lose trust, and we're asked to restore our trust in life again.
Well, Mark, the work that you have done in helping all of us be able to restore our faith in life again, our trust in life again, is remarkable. And I, on behalf of everyone who's listening, want to thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, Mariana, for all you do in this wonderful show and all the good work of Bread for the Journey.
Thank you. And maybe we can do another show where we do just this. This has been a lot of fun.
Sure, I'd love to.
It's great. So to our listening audience, as I said earlier, Bread for the Journey is a nonprofit organization, and being that, we could use your support. If you find a place in your heart to make a financial contribution, or if you'd like to start a chapter of Bread for the Journey in your town, please go to our website at breadforthejourney.org. If we all pitch in a little bit, we can change the world. And I close today, as I do every show, with this. May all beings be happy. May all beings be safe. May all beings be free.
We hope our program inspired you this week. Please join Mariana Cacciatore for another edition of Bread for the Journey next Saturday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.